there definitely needs to be a much larger groundswell of pressure on the Nigerian authorities as well as the international community to come up with an effective response to Boko Haram and what they're doing to the Nigerian people in the northern part of the country.
And Ronald Pelago, we just have about a minute left. The issue of the kidnapped girls, despite all this international attention, no success in locating them. Does your organization have any sense of what is happening there? And does anyone know where they are?
We actually don't know specifically where they are. Even satellite imagery wouldn't show that. And obviously, a rescue of the girls is very complicated from a number of points of view, but primarily because one such military response, for example, could endanger the girls themselves. We know that they're with insurgents who are heavily armed. And so it is a very difficult situation, but I think it's one that does call for more regional and international cooperation.
We want to thank you all for being with us. Rona Pelagal of Human Rights Watch, Adete Akwe of Amnesty International, and Professor Horace Campbell of Syracuse University. We'll link to all your reports at democracynow.org. Tune in to our Martin Luther King special on Monday. You don't want to miss it. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Today is January the 16th, 2015. Very, very important day because you are here. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR news director back from a world tour, John Conroy. Welcome back, John. Good to see you.
Very good to be here, Jay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Very briefly, I know it'd be hard to capsulize, but you've been to some interesting places. The last time you called me on the trip, you were headed to Las Vegas. Did you make it that far?
I made it to Las Vegas and visited my daughter and her boyfriend there for about 3 days.
Okay.
And then traveled the rest of the way to Tucson, Arizona, and spent a great deal of time with my sister and her family. And
Tucson's one of my favorite cities. The air is so nice and clean and dry, of course, but it's just a really refreshing time for me, especially this time of the year when it's cold up here. It's a little bit warmer down there and a lot of sunshine.
A lot of sunshine, and we had snow on New Year's Day.
And then especially for next week, which is our WHFR Journal special Detroit Auto Show, as I always call it, edition. Maybe you can talk about the sinkhole at the National Corvette Museum that you visited.
Yes, Bowling Green, Kentucky, the museum is there, and the sinkhole that happened, I think, about a year ago, took a few Corvettes down in with it.
Yeah, classic Corvettes. They've pretty much restored most of those, but they still have the hole in the floor, I understand.
Hole's still there with a large plexiglass covering over it so that no one can fall in that sinkhole.
It was big, folks. I mean, imagine eight cars went down, and you couldn't drive them out. I mean, they had to use cranes and trucks, and most of them were smashed and dented and in bad shape, and I think it was 100 feet or more deep. I mean, those are the underground areas, and I'm not a geologist, that are various faults in the earth, usually from tunneling or mines or fracking or something, but I think it can happen naturally, too, and Wouldn't you know, they built a museum right on top of a major sinkhole, and it finally broke through and took a bunch of cars with it. So I suggested that they should just keep the sinkhole there with the plastic cover on it and pay extra admission to people, that maybe to give them a bucket ride down into the hole or something. I mean, people might pay $20 to ride down into a sinkhole. Who knows? You know, they could make a lot of money for their museum that way.
Well, it is close to cave country in Kentucky as well.
Yes, right. There's a lot of underground caves and those sorts of things naturally.
That's right.
Okay. But, well, I guess we did that ahead of next week. But we hope to have a special guest. We usually get an automotive journalist from one of the major Detroit area magazines. All the best car magazines in the world. Well, with the exception of one magazine, are right here in the Detroit area, either based in Detroit or based in Ann Arbor, where there's actually three different magazines. So we usually are able to get a significant journalist from one of those magazines to tell us about how they saw the auto show and what they think of the current day cars and issues, and that'll be a lot of fun. But today, a lot of stories, breaking news. But the first thing I have to do, well, besides the disclaimer, remember the disclaimer, John? You want to do it?
You better refresh me, Jay.
All the opinions expressed on this show, remember, folks, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, administrators, or students. But, you know, we thank them very much for allowing us to express our opinions, as long as we try to be responsible, you know?
I mean, right.
That's what John is here now.
Responsible.
If I go a little crazy, he can pull me down.
Keep track on you, Jay.
Yeah, right. Can right the wrongs. But there's an announcement that has to do with the fact that Henry Ford College is up for accreditation this year. The last time this happened is it's like a renewal of a license for a broadcast station. If you're not accredited, and the group is called, the National Independent Group is called the Higher Learning Commission. And if you don't get accredited, your college degree is worth nothing. You could take all the same classes. You can take, you know, study all you want to, usual ways. But without the accreditation, really validation is what it is, it means nothing. So it means you didn't really get that degree if the college is not accredited when you graduate. So it's very important. And we've always gotten the most extensive period of approval, because we had our, I guess you could say, ducks in a row. And we got ducks on campus, too. So sometimes they walk in a row, but usually it's a different formation. But other than the metaphor, we take seriously what we do here. And we have many people working constantly on evaluation and implementing change to be better. And we've been doing that, 20 years at least. I've been here 40 plus years, full time for 40 in the last 6 years as a part timer. But very, very important to us to find out what we do good. And if we're not doing well in a way, improve. But even if we're doing good, why can't we do better? We can always do better. And so now that's kind of mandated by the Higher Learning Commission, and they're keeping tabs on schools about every year or two, in relatively minor ways, but this is a big deal this year. So here's the announcement. We're going to read it on this show briefly, as briefly as we can, for the next several shows. Henry Ford College seeks comments from the public about the college in preparation for the institution's periodic evaluation by its regional accrediting agency. The college will host a visit April 27th, 28th, 2015, with a team representing the Higher Learning Commission of the North Central Association. And we have been accredited by the commission since 1949. The HLC team will review the institution's ongoing ability to meet the commission's criteria for accreditation. The public is invited to submit comments regarding the college. For information on submitting comments, you can visit the commission's website, and it is www.ncahlc.org. I'll give you that again. www.ncahlc.org. Comments must address substantive matters related to the quality of the institution or its academic programs. Comments must be in writing. All comments must be received by March 27th, 2015. Now, if you want to view Henry Ford College's profile on the directory of HLC institutions, you can visit the link below, which is, and unfortunately it's very long here, but it is at that same website, www.ncahlc.org, ncahlc.org, and you can find Henry Ford College's profile there if you want to see what we say about ourselves. All right, moving on. Top story probably has to do with Martin Luther King Day and the fact that the trash will be picked up in Dearborn as usual.
Gotta have that.
That's so important. We don't want unpicked up trash sitting there. Nope. And we don't want people to have to go another week with their trash in the garage. However, of course, as you know, most municipal offices, like the city of Dearborn, city libraries, will be closed. Dearborn Public Schools will be closed. Henry Ford College will be closed in honor of the holiday. But not all schools everywhere, such as
Downriver, Gross Hill schools will be open.
Yeah.
Some of the town, I believe the township offices are closed, but the township schools will be open.
Okay. We're not sure about any other Downriver schools offhand.
I'm not positive. No.
Yeah. So you need to check with your school first, folks, before you send the kids in or not. Don't assume that there's no school. Some districts, it's not required that all schools close. I know Detroit Public Schools are closed in respect for the holiday. By the way, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday actually was last Thursday. It's on the 15th of January, in case you want to celebrate the real day of the birthday, but just to make it a three-day weekend out of it, it's always celebrated on the Monday that's closest to the 15th. And in this case, it'll be Monday the 19th. That will be that day off. But trash will be picked up in Dearborn. That's the most important thing we can share this hour. But there are some other things, so let me jump on through here. Oh, as long as we're on MLK Day, I should say that we have special programming that you won't find anywhere else on MLK Day. And we start at 12 noon with Democracy Now!, which is on every Friday. So if you love the Friday edition, there is actually a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday edition, which we don't currently broadcast, but you can get it at democracynow.org at any time. If you want to go to their website, their shows are either streamed live there or you can listen after the fact if you want to. Nonetheless, they always have and will have, again, a special show, very special show, about Martin Luther King and about the nature of the day and about the issues that Martin Luther King stood for. So that's going to happen from 12 noon to 1 o'clock this Monday here on WHFR, 89.3 FM, the station making waves. And in addition, we're going to have a second hour following that from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, and it's called King's Last March. And it's a special program produced by American Radio Works, and looks into the factors that caused Dr. King to abandon political niceties and say things that even his political partners did not want said. This is during the last year of his life. He had moved beyond integration. Having seen how the political and economic systems worked, he was talking about curtailing the vast resources being used to fund the Vietnam War and redistributing them to uplift the nation's poor. J. Edgar Hoover, at the time, after he started making these kinds of speeches, called him the most dangerous Negro in America. Mm-hmm. That's J. Edgar Hoover for you.
Yeah.
Yep. which, if you read anything Travis Smiley's book is about that last year, in fact, in King's life. And it goes into great detail about the harassment he suffered under the FBI and Hoover because of the kind of guy Hoover was. So we hope that that's going to be a very amazing and educating program. Typically, people talk, of course, and it's very important, his civil rights marches and his belief in civil disobedience, passive civil disobedience, not militant civil disobedience, by the way. That's what makes him such a hero, one of the great leaders for peace in the whole history of the world, as far as we know, in recorded history anyway. And a very, very significant figure. But in that last year, yep, he turned to the most terrible violence of all in the world and suggested we stop it, and that is making war, which nothing more dangerous than trying to suggest that, I guess, in a climate where people think war is necessary for one or several reasons. So King's Last March will be 1 to 2 o'clock this coming Monday here on WHFR. I think we're the only station featuring that in this area. It is something Very special to listen to. I also recommend, of course, Travis Smiley's book, which I have and have been reading, but I can't remember the title now. But it's all about King's last year, the last year of his life. And so King's Last March is pretty much the same topic, presented as, of course, a radio documentary. So that's what we're doing here. And I hope you have some time to talk about his life and his legacy and to get the correct story, too. There is that new movie in the movie theaters now. I don't think it's a coincidence that it just opened in the last 2 weeks before Martin Luther King Day. Selma is the title. Yep. It has been nominated for at least one Academy Award, and I'm not sure in which categories right now. I didn't bring that list with me today. The only thing I understand, because it's a movie that's fictionalized a little bit to make it a better story for an hour and a half long movie, but some of the critics or some historians have pointed out that it portrays LBJ as not in favor of these civil rights initiatives, that he was very stubborn about implementing any of the changes that King wanted, which is amazingly not true, that he actually was in favor. Now, it was pragmatic. He was a very pragmatic politician, Lyndon Baines Johnson. He felt if he could do this for the blacks, he could get all their votes in the future for the Democrats. And that's kind of the way it worked out. He did, of course, pass significant civil rights legislation, and but it was, of course, all because of the efforts to organize and to champion those initiatives of Martin Luther King Jr. and other significant civil rights leaders too, but King was certainly the most noticeable and most powerful of the leaders in that movement. But LBJ was actually, for his own reasons, not against doing that, and deserves a little bit more credit than he got in the movie Selma. Apparently, and I thought in one historian, I don't want to state this directly, but it was LBJ's wife, Linda Bird Johnson, who was not really in favor of giving black people too much additional rights. And of course, both LBJ and his wife were from Texas, kind of a southern state, of southern western, but still, and so there was a little bit of that kind of racism going on then that was so prominent in Mississippi and Alabama that had to be confronted directly, and Georgia, and some of it may still be around. You pick the place. You think about that. But we've got to still work on the issues of equality and political justice in this country. It doesn't matter your color, your creed, your sexual preference. This is my opinion. Okay, I already gave the qualification.
Right.
Okay. Yep. I think that this applies to all of us. Okay, the lessons that we learn about civil rights here, it applies to everybody's civil rights, no matter who you are and what you believe. Okay. I did, by the way, John, a big deal last week about the problem in France, Je suis Charlie and so on, that movement, and expressed that we should never forget that such acts usually cause further government crackdown, as they say, and less civil rights for everybody.
Less freedoms.
Less freedoms, yep. Right. And in fact, now the president of France is saying we're going to crack down even more on hate language. And a few people who got the idea wrong, leaders in France, are saying, well, that should be anybody that criticizes anybody else's religion should be arrested. Gee, Bill Maher of his show on HBO, he'd be arrested in a second. He criticizes religions there almost every week on his show. I don't think he's come back on the air yet on HBO with his series, but he takes like December, January off sort of to rest up from all the slings and arrows that people send his way. But I'm just saying, and as I said before, we have to be careful. If we want freedom of speech, there has to be freedom of speech for everybody. But as I said last week, too, there is a delineation between calling out for or causing hatred and calling out for violence against other people because of their ideas. That's not right. America does not have any sort of laws against hate language, but if you commit a crime, and I think it varies from state to state, that can be connected to hate language. Let's say while you're robbing someone, you call them a couple racist epithets while you're doing it. as if that was one of the reasons you robbed them or beat them up or something, right? Well, then your punishment would be more severe because they call it a hate crime.
Yeah.
But other countries, including Canada, Germany especially, if you actually advocate, let's say, as some neo-Nazis, that is Nazis of today, might say, against black people or Jews or whatever, that they should be minimized or eliminated from society, you're going to be taken to a court of law and you may serve jail time for that. If you publish a book in Germany saying that the Holocaust never happened, the Jews were not killed in the Nazi concentration camps, that boggles my mind that you can make an argument for that. But you can make an argument. It doesn't have much evidence as far as I'm concerned, but you can make an argument. I mean, the deniers for that don't say, I know it's off topic from local, but the deniers don't say that there weren't concentration camps that had a lot of Jews in them, but they just said that, no, Hitler didn't really kill 6 million. Hmm. And they want to see the bodies, you know. Just line up all the skulls, I guess, before you can prove that. In any event, we have to be careful not to lose the freedoms that I think our country was based on, even though we want these protections, and we want to, of course, some way make the people that are responsible for such terrible violence and injury to be punished. That's a natural thing. But then to have the government, for political reasons, flip-flop to say that nobody has free speech in regard to religion of any sort of criticism, that's just totally wrong, it's in my opinion. All right, moving on. We're past that. Going to last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide from the 11th of this month, District 7 is a school district. It's sort of part of Dearborn or Dearborn Heights or something, but they have their own superintendent. So they're not Crestwood and they're not Dearborn, but they have their own superintendent. He has been missing in action. I won't say AWOL because I think the school board knows where he is, but they won't say what he's doing or how long he's going to be gone. It's just kind of interesting to me. And you know, draw your own conclusions. But they're getting things done. The associate superintendent is in charge over there. They did have a secret meeting in December, and nobody knows why. So was it about the missing superintendent? And by the way, the missing superintendent, the absent superintendent, his name is Todd Tiken, or Tiken, or Thiken, T-H-I-E-K-E-N. He did begin an indefinite leave in December, so that is official, but nobody knows why they had the secret meeting. So obviously there are reasons why public bodies have approval, a little caveat in state laws. There are some contract negotiations or mediation sessions that can be held privately. And I won't go into the reasons for that, but sometimes it's understandable if you know the details there. Okay. Yeah, next, the Chamber of Commerce of Dearborn Heights is set to, actually they've already done it. They're honoring outstanding businesses and leaders, okay? And that took place it's going to take place. I saw 13th, and I'm thinking 2 days ago. There's another chamber event there that we're going to talk about later in the show. But it's going to be March 13th at the Henry Hotel. And I'm always thinking, which one is that? Is that the former St. Regis? I think it is.
St. Regis, yeah.
The former St. Regis is now called the Henry Hotel.
Henry Hotel.
It's not the St. Regis, right. And the Adobe Hotel that used to be the Hyatt Regency,
right,
next to the Fairlane Town Center also, we don't know what its new name is going to be because Adobe's not running it now.
Now there's no group.
Yeah, they haven't changed the sign yet. So okay. Nobody's up the money to put a new sign up, but that's still operating. But anyway, this event is going to be a nice luncheon. It's called the Annual Chamber Choice Awards, like the People's Choice Awards on TV for entertainment people, and Expo. Ooh, it's going to be an Expo. So there's going to be business leaders that have little tables talking about how good they are. Well, here are the awards, and it's significant. The Business of the Year in this area, DFCU Financial.
Huh?
Used to be called the Dearborn Federal Credit Union. Mm-hmm. And it was first formed just to service people that worked at Ford Motor Company. you know, doing things that in ways different from a commercial bank. And there's offices all over, but now they are have organized and they are, if you will, statewide because they're not just in Dearborn. And they're pretty well managed and they make nice profits. In all fair disclosure, I have an account with them. And just like my criticism of all banks and all credit unions, only get like a tenth of a percent back. Now, once a year, all credit unions, they give a little extra bonus depending on how much money you've invested or borrowed from them. They give a little bit more than the public rate, but it's still not even a percent, you know. And it's, you know, however, I understand that 2 days ago in Switzerland, they've just officially changed. They've gone off the euro. There used to be that the Swiss dollar was connected to the European dollar, and they stopped doing that. And now all of their banks are giving minus interest. So if you have money there, you will lose 0.75% every year. You will lose 0.75%. Well, for the honor of them safeguarding your money. And,
privilege.
You know, and allowing, I don't know, ATMs or checks to be written. Now, in this country, of course, we know that sometimes checking accounts, you have to pay money for, at least somewhat, because you have to pay for checks. Now, a lot of places have free checking, and but a lot of checking accounts don't give any interest at all. It's just the service. But for a savings account to give you minus interest, a lot of economic people, banking people who know better than I are saying it's a bad trend worldwide. That pretty soon, yes, the money you keep cash at home under your bed or someplace secure, like a safe deposit box perhaps, at least won't lose any money. Mm-hmm. I mean, it will be suffering from inflation, if there is any, going on, you know, where the money you have is worth less each year, but at least you won't be officially losing anything every year, which is, I think, crazy. I know the banks provide a service, but you're telling me banks are not making a profit? Swiss banks are not making a profit at all, and they have to give you less money? That's crazy. I mean, what have they been investing in that's going down? I mean, they're not being very well run. Well, DFCU has given a big, nice extra chunk back with their almost no interest, though. And I think they're pretty well run. I'm very happy with them, but that's not an endorsement. By the way, even if it was, folks, it's not a commercial. They are a nonprofit, I believe. Still a nonprofit institution. So, well, pulled that one out. Who are the other awards? Okay, Small Business of the Year. Moo Cluck Moo. Oh. Ever heard of that, John?
I heard about it when I read it in the paper.
Okay.
I hadn't heard about it before.
I didn't know. They do have a location in Dearborn Heights and also in Canton, and they serve the usual, as you might tell from the name, moo, cows, right? Cluck, chickens. Moo, more cows. Okay.
So beef and chicken.
Cow, yeah. Cow, chicken, cow. Anyway, they serve burgers, fries, and chicken sandwiches, among other options, and they pride themselves in providing quality food using ingredients that do not include hormones, preservatives, and other chemicals. And they really think that they are serving better fast food. And anyway, all by the way, also their menu items apparently are all gluten-free.
So gluten-free,
if you have a problem with gluten, whatever that is, don't worry about it there. Unfortunately, to give the fair and balanced picture here, I looked at their website, and they actually allow, or at least websites that allow people to make comments, and it's always the people that don't like what they taste that seem to have the worst comments, and they're there more than the people that love it. I haven't eaten there myself because it is up in, it's on Telegraph, but it's in Dearborn Heights, a little further north. One person has complained, oh, the food costs too much. Yeah, the burgers, I think, are $5 or $6 each per burger, not a dollar, but $5 or $6. But would you pay for healthier? Would you pay more? Maybe you should. Maybe you should endorse that kind of restaurant that has natural food, no hormones, no preservatives. And then another person said, of course, it didn't taste good. Right, because natural food is natural. And it's not as tender sometimes. The meat is not as tender because they don't keep the chickens or the cattle's penned up so they can't even move, but their meat gets tender because they get flabby, basically, because they can't move around. So grass-fed beef and chicken, for example, is a little bit tougher because the animals have free range, as it's called, at least some free range. They might be kept in a big warehouse, but at least they're not penned up, so they can't move at all.
No.
Yeah. So Moo Cluck Moo got Business of the Year. Business Leader of the Year, very proud of this, our own president, Stan Jensen, right here at Henry Ford College, primarily because he came in and the college was, I think $16 million in debt, and he straightened that out within a year and a half, and he negotiated with everybody here for massive pay cuts. He, as president, took a pay cut. Our vice presidents took a major pay cut, I think of 10% or more, and nobody likes that. But we're doing fine now. We're building up a little reserve fund now. We're not making money. It's not so much that we can cut tuition, unfortunately, but at least we're not losing money. We can stay in business and pay our bills to the people that give us services. The Impact Award, whatever that's about, making biggest impact in town, went to Gary Coleman, who's the owner of Park Place Catering. And Gary is now also the president of Henry Ford College Foundation. And he's been a partner here. In fact, we have a dining room in this building right next to the 5101 restaurant, a small private dining room that he endowed, the Coleman Dining Room.
Oh, that's right.
Yes,
yeah.
That's why that name is there, right. Mm-hmm. So he's a big friend of the college, and we congratulate him for that recognition from the chamber. So those are the four big awards, and check out some of those institutions. You already know about Henry Ford College because you listen to this station, but see what you think, and it's always good that there's such businesses that can be exceptional in those difficult times, no doubt. Okay. Oh my goodness, we're at halfway past, so we're going to give you those late breaking stories next, directly from pressandguide.com. No, don't go there yourself. I know you could. You've got your computer probably on while you're listening to the show, but let us talk about it here. And listen, because you need to listen up to comments from Jim Hightower and, of course, Jack Lessenberry. Here they are. Uh-oh. Look at that. Okay. I can do it. Technology. I love it.
Look out, there America. Here comes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Dubbed a corporate coup d'etat by Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, it's a grandiose grab for power masked as a trade deal, allowing an unprecedented level of global corporate rule over Americans. Let's take a quick look at what we'll be getting into. The trade hoax. Of the document's 29 chapters, only 5 address tariffs and other actual trade matters. The other 24 consist of various ways to free corporations from any accountability and from any responsibility to the world community's common good. Bye-bye, buy American. TPP dictates that all corporations based in any member nation must be given equal access to the public dollars that any government spends on equipment, food, highway projects, etc. Thus, our own national, state, and local governments would no longer be free to give preference to suppliers of our choice. Buy American and buy local programs could be challenged by private corporations. Wall Street rides again. If anyone doubts that this pact is a corporate boondoggle dressed in trade clothes, let them read its shameful financial provisions. Too big to fail laws, ensuring that the cost of a bank's collapse would be borne by investors, not taxpayers. Under TPP, giant global banks could scamper into private tribunals to grab billions of our tax dollars if they have to comply with such laws. Also, our nation's financial regulations would have to be harmonized to comply with TPP's extreme deregulation, recreating the anything-goes Wall Street ethic that crashed the world economy in 2008. A Robin Hood tax on volatile, super high-speed speculators? Nope. TPP specifically lets global banks challenge and kill these laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, to stop the TPP, go to exposethetpp.org.
As everybody who isn't in solitary confinement knows, gasoline prices are now unbelievably low. So is inflation, and as a result, there's less interest in energy conservation these days. Sales of electric vehicles and even hybrids are down, and there doesn't seem to be as much interest in them from reporters gearing up for the annual auto show in Detroit. Nor do I hear as much concern for the heating problems of the poor and homeless as we move into this harsh winter. Yet any rational person knows these low energy prices won't last any more than today's snow and ice will be around in August. Georgetown University believes long-term energy solutions will take a community effort, and they're offering a $5 million prize as incentive to small and medium-sized towns, counties, and cities willing to rethink their energy use. The school will award that money to the community that best demonstrates success in lowering energy consumption over the next 2 years. Georgetown's Energy Prize competition hasn't gotten a lot of national notice, but 52 communities across the nation have signed up to try to win. Three are in Michigan, the city of Holland, Houghton County in the far west Upper Peninsula, and the combined entry from Farmington, Farmington Hills, and their public schools. The Farmington folks seem especially gung-ho and have invited me to speak to a community celebration tonight at their Caustic Activities Center. Not exactly the event's glamour. They have a former American Idol runner-up who will sing. Nate Geinzer, an assistant to the city manager, is the point man for the competition. He told me the Farmingtons are determined to make a 10-community final round and sent me the city's fairly massive, detailed plan to get there. I found the plan impressive. They aren't calling for a series of short-term gimmicks, like getting people to wear more sweaters and turn the thermostat down. They're trying to make energy conservation a fairly painless, multi-pronged, permanent way of life. They've enlisted two key partners from the nonprofit sector, the Clean Energy Coalition, and the group called Michigan Saves, which helps make energy improvements possible for consumers via affordable financing. The Farmingtons have a multi-year and multifaceted approach that is as impressively comprehensive and detailed as a military operation. They have plans for everything from teaching people what light bulbs to buy to landscaping in a way that saves energy. This is a long-term community effort aimed both at the public and private sectors, and even would put the arts to work to save energy. Reading their plan, I realized something. Whether or not they win the Georgetown Energy Prize, if they accomplish the goals set forth in their plan, they will already have won. They will have made more rational energy use a normal way of life, and these cities and their residents will therefore be in a far better position when energy prices again lurch upwards. Over the long haul, my guess is that any community that really tries for this prize will save more than $5 million, whether they win or not, which is, I suspect, what Georgetown had in mind all along.
And there we are. First was, of course, Jim Hightower, our friendly populist out of Texas, Austin, Texas, in fact, talking about the TPP, which I think is much less discussed than it needs to be because it could be a disaster. I mean, it could be worse than the agreement we had with Mexico about, you know, business and special discounts and encouraging all the businesses in the U.S. to move to Mexico and so on. The TPP is really a problem. I know it's a national one. In a way, it's local because who knows what businesses might leave Michigan if the TPP is fully implemented. And I also hate the whole concept of it because it's been done basically in secret, as Jim has indicated, through negotiations that have not been made public even. Public is not invited. Reporters are not invited. And then Jim Hightower, Jack Lessenberry, right here in Michigan, out of Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, talking about saving energy, which we all need to consider all the time. And even Pope Francis, 2 days ago, suggested that all Catholics need to talk about and be aware of climate change and the fact that it's happening and what we can do about it. May I imagine? That's... You know, you don't have to imagine. It happened. That's what he said. So, and he's on the right track, I believe, in my humble opinion. Okay. So what are those late-breaking stories that you've been waiting so much for? All right. Well, on the pressandguide.com website, they do talk about free admission to the Henry Ford on MLK Day. So that's a great thing to do with if the kids are out of school, if they are out of school for you. Take them to Henry Ford Museum. A lot of exhibits. All the exhibits, not just the bus that was famous from Selma, Alabama, where the woman from Detroit.
Rosa Parks.
Yes, had to sit, was supposed to sit at the back, and she didn't sit at the back, and she caused a big ruckus, and that was great. But no, not just that, all the exhibits are open, and it's a wonderful place. If you haven't been there recently, a lot of things going on in the museum, okay? The village is not open yet. It's too cold. So they won't be open until March or April or May, somewhere in there. We'll let you know.
They're not churning their butter yet. It's a little too cold.
No, right. A little bit interesting story is that the Dearborn Commission on Compensation, and this is a group appointed by Mayor O'Reilly that actually reviews the pay of elected officials. And these recommendations must be made in 45 days, so we'll know in about 40 days or so whether or not they recommend the mayor and the other people should get a pay raise. Members of this year's group are Carl Fava, he's chairman. Mr. Fava is a certified public accountant, is owner of Business Financial Consultants. Shakar Aoun owns Garden Foods. Andrew Mazzara is on it, and he is our former president of Henry Ford College. I know him well. And Leslie Wenban, manager of the Algeria Printing Company on Ford Road, and the president of the Exchange Club. And Gary Coleman.
The same
name
Coleman.
Dropper. Right. He's from Park Place. He's on it. And Gary Stanford. He's the owner of, guess what? Stanford Chevrolet. And Cadillac in Dearborn. They convene and they're going to appoint subcommittees to review the city's financial information, look at the pay of people in other cities, and meet with these elected officials to see if they, you know, are they wearing a nice enough suit? Can they afford to, get a good haircut and things like that? I don't know what they ask, but I'm being facetious, of course. By the way, right now in Dearborn, Mayor O'Reilly gets $131,133 a year, and the clerk gets $72,555. Both will pay 20% of their health care benefits out of that money, or from some money they get. And, of course, those are full-time positions. The council members are part-time. A lot of people don't realize that. All seven of our council members, part-time, they get $93 a meeting for up to 70 meetings a year. So it's a good idea. It's good for them if they meet more often. But if the meetings go beyond 3 or 4 hours each, then they're not making too much. They're over minimum wage still, but right. The council president, who is the top vote getter in the election every 4 years, actually will get $17,267 a year. That's below the poverty level, folks, so they need a day job. The other six council members will each get $14,409 annually. So the meetings are on top. The meeting pay is on top of the salaries. So not too much.
I always believe that meetings are more productive when they're shorter. Anyhow,
yeah. The only elected officials in the country that get less money is school board members. They're part time too. Usually, yeah. I mean, and they get much less than even the school board members. Than the council members, much less the mayor. Okay. But it's just interesting to see how they go about that. It's your government in action. But who appointed the commission members? Mayor O'Reilly. So, okay. If you don't give them a raise, you won't get appointed again. I thought the bigger interest was the chamber event that was held last Tuesday on the 13th of this month. And it was about business. And they met at the Fairlane Club, which is right down the road from Henry Ford College here. And it was sponsored by Comcast. It's part of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce's Business Builders Series. And we represented the station last year and heard a speech by O'Reilly and also Dan Paletko, the mayor of Dearborn Heights. Because of jury duty this week for yours truly, they didn't pick me. Again, I guess it was too smart for my own good. I wasn't a jury. I couldn't be a jury of a peer jury.
No peers in your class, huh?
But it was interesting. It would have been interesting. It was a civil case, And I've never been in a civil court case. It was always a criminal court case. In a civil case, you know, if somebody is found guilty, they just have to pay money. They never go to jail.
Yes.
So it's a matter of violation of contracts and
fines
things.
And
fines. Yeah, well, fine is the punishment. Mm-hmm. And this one was Automobile Club of Michigan being sued by someone who felt they didn't get enough reimbursement for medical costs related to an accident. Somebody that was insured by AAA who caused the accident or was responsible for it somehow. And so they wanted additional money. And it was one of those, it was really sad, of course, because it was one of those catastrophic injuries because the amounts they were going to be asking for reimbursement, apparently AAA, I just heard at the beginning, they'd already paid $1.7 million in health care costs. But the people were asking for an additional couple hundred thousand. That's not chump change, but you know, they went down the jury pool and they asked us all, do you think that's a lot of money? Well, no, it's not a lot of money for insurance. And all of us had our healthcare stories. And that's chump change, you know, compared to the cost of the healthcare system, if you had to pay it outright, you know, but because I was kicked out of AAA, not kicked out, but they raised my rates 50% this year for no reason they would tell me, I hold a grudge. And I told the courtroom that because they do. I mean, I try to be fair in terms of the trial, but I do have that negative impression. I found other insurance. I mean, I've done nothing wrong. You know, good credit rating, whatever, you know, you want to say. And they wouldn't give me a reason. So it was after 53 years with one company.
Wow.
You know. So they also, the opposed, somebody else said, We insure 10 cars, and my husband and I, we've had AAA all our lives. We love them.
Yeah.
Okay, so the defense attorney, he said, no,
we don't want
she's
you.
Off the trial, too. She loves them too much. So, and I just had, you know, suspicions about them. I don't hate the Auto Club of Michigan, certainly. But they made a lot of profit on me. I think I only had two claims over 53 years for just minor stuff, and so what did they do with all that money? Well, they paid other people, of course. That's how it works. But Mayor O'Reilly basically said that this year the big deal was moving into the new administrative center out of City Hall. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a big story in Press and Guide from this Wednesday about the amount of money that Art Space is going to be spending to renew and renovate the former City Hall, which, John, you said was
$16.5 million.
Yeah, yeah. And it's only going to take, according to Mayor O'Reilly here, about a year. Somewhere next spring, 2016, they're going to be able to move in officially, Art Space, to their galleries, and they're also going to have living space for many of the artists. Not all of the artists. Other artists can display from the local area, but they'll have living space for some of the artists. And those galleries and of course, and even workspaces for the artists that live there will be open to the public all the time, pretty much, so you can appreciate what goes on and talk to the artists directly in the case of those that are there demonstrating. And O'Reilly, by the way, said he's proud of the fact that costs were kept below the norm for, I guess, for moving into the new facility. He said most projects like this cost $100 per square foot, but the city was able to tackle this for a cost of $66 per square foot. So how many square feet do you have in a building like that? Boy, it's a big building, two floors.
Mm-hmm.
And the second floor, I believe, is not being used at all right now by the city. So nobody wants to rent the space. They, you know, Dearborn Public Schools has said pretty definitely, well, as far as we know now, we're never going to go in there. But it might change our mind someday. But so anyway, but the building will be less, more efficient and save money for the city long term. To be in the new City Hall, which they're not calling City Hall, at least not yet, anyway. Okay. He also said it's a great deal that we have a new train station, a new transit system with stops from Ann Arbor to Detroit, including Dearborn. He said there is hope that eventually it will travel to Pontiac. Well, how is it, Mayor O'Reilly, I ask, that coming back from Chicago on the train in early December to the new train station, the conductor said, you know, the train goes to Pontiac now.
Hmm.
And there was even a woman sitting across from me. She was on her way to get off at Royal Oak.
Wow.
Which is north of the Detroit station.
Sure it is.
The train right now, Mr. Mayor, surprise, does go to Pontiac. And it originates from Pontiac when it circles down to Detroit and then goes to Chicago. I know because when we picked it up that day, you know, in Dearborn, going to Chicago, it was coming from Pontiac. So there, it's not the M1 rail that is an issue here, although that connects to all of this somehow. Although maybe M1 is just a commuter rail. Maybe it doesn't connect to the big train system. John's not sure.
Not sure. Okay. But I know, but it's... All I know is it's a lot of work being done in the middle of.
Oh, and it's all good. We need more Metro Transit. Yeah. It's better for everybody not to have to depend on automobiles, especially in these terrible Michigan winters, although today is not too bad. It's cold, but it's not too bad out there for driving. Be careful anyway. Dearborn Mayor Politko, what did he say? Well, he said the city will be out of debt this year, and he says that will give us more independence. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? He didn't say, or the story doesn't say. Does that mean less oversight from federal administration and have to fill out those forms every couple months or every year about what you're doing and, you know, your progress in getting rid of the deficit? So that's a little bit of a paperwork hassle. But I would assume if they're not having to pay off debt anymore, they'll have more available funds for new stuff or to pay for old stuff that needs to be done. I don't know. We'll get
perhaps more freedom.
Let go in here in a while. The city also worked to establish a new ordinance department with animal control. That was a good thing. I don't know if we reported that officially. I know there was a story a couple months ago. Now, they didn't set up a new department, but they made their ordinance department responsible for animal control 24 hours a day. They did hire a new person, though, to specialize in animal control issues.
Okay.
So even though they only have a four-day work week out there at Dearborn Heights in City Hall, their animal control is 24/7. So you got an animal issue of some sort, give them a call. He said the August 2014 flood out in Dearborn Heights was really bad, and there's still much work to be done. I guess we had problems here in Dearborn too. Yeah. And of course, they both shook hands at the end, apparently, and said that, you know, mi casa y su casa, you know, that what's good for Dearborn is good for Dearborn Heights, and come visit anytime, and so on. And they've already partnered. We know the cities have already partnered on several projects, and will continue to look for ways to make the communities closer. Hammond Planetarium, that's our planetarium in our science building here at Henry Ford College, has started its own series of lectures. You can find out more about that by going to hfcc.edu. We haven't changed our website address yet, even though we dropped one of the C's, you know, the community C. But nonetheless, you can find out all the details about that because there's several talks, different days of the week, and it continues through early March. So Winter Sky Planetarium visit, lights on the ceiling and professional people to talk about astronomy and stars and what it all means. It's a great thing and free of charge, I believe. I think so. Just got to get there early to get a seat. And we have new co-op classes. Yes, we do. And again, you'd have to go to hfcc.edu to find out more details. There's I think five areas now that have added five new classes. And what a co-op class is where after you have studied here and learned things, you actually get a job with employers that are willing to participate in this program. And of course, you're evaluated on how well you do in that job. And hopefully it's related to your major, of course. And you get paid a little bit of money. Not a lot, but you get paid money. You do have to pay for the class, though, but the class finally gives you credit towards your degree here, which is really a good thing. I love the idea of co-op classes. Often they're at the just at the senior level, the fourth year of education. But, you know, that's, I think it should be done as early as possible. When I went to school at Oakland University back in the 60s, my undergraduate work, they made sure that candidates for teaching, people in the teacher ed program, that they actually did a kind of like an internship because it wasn't paid, so it wasn't co-op, but you had to actually take a class for a credit and help a teacher in a real classroom.
Assist
a teacher in a classroom for a whole semester, you know, about 6-8 hours a week, but they were evaluated on how well they did that assisting. And it's interesting that a majority of people who finished that decided not to continue in teacher ed. Because they weren't good at it. Yeah. They hated, I mean, they thought, well, as a student, it'll be great to be a teacher, right? Because they get all the power and they give all the grades and they have authority. But when you actually see it from the teacher's side, sometimes you're not cut out for doing it that way, you know. So, story?
Well, yes. I had some experience substitute teaching.
Oh.
And I had aides or assistants come who were intern students taking class. You know, they were going to school. Yeah. They were student interns. And I would put them to work. And like you said, oftentimes they didn't like all that work that they were having to do and backed off. You
know? My daughter graduated with a teacher's degree from University of Michigan Dearborn after going here to Henry Ford College,
okay.
her dad's workplace,
yep.
for 2 years. But they put her, and it's well known throughout the state as one of the most intensive teacher ed schools, and it's very well regarded. Did help her to get a full-time job immediately upon graduating. Especially because she had several internships that were required, not just one semester, but several other experiences that were part of the requirements. So each a little bit different, you know, different aspects of being a teacher, and she's doing very well. And it's her 14th year teaching now. So guess she'll stay in there for a while. Okay, it's coming down to the end. We have 5 minutes before Joanne Korczynska and Highway 61, the best in the blues. She got some special auto show blues songs to play throughout. Not for the whole 4 hours, because that would be just too much, but every now and then we're going to get a blues-oriented song, I think. Oh, and she's right here in the studio, too. Boy, just piling up the CDs. It's going to be a great show, so stay tuned for that. In just 4 minutes or so. And let's see, I do have the, I did want to mention, and they're usually too long to read and complete, but we do give credit to a friend of the journal, Craig Foran. They're always a friend if they agree to come on the show and so on. Craig Foran in the Dearborn Press and Guide writes his op-ed piece, as they call it, this last Wednesday, the 14th, about how he learned the importance of treating women with respect. I'm sure he always did, but there's a documentary that's out and about that maybe you could rent if you're part of Netflix or have a cable channel of some sort that is updated enough. It's called Miss Representation, like Miss America, Miss, one word, and then representation. But of course, the idea is that women are misrepresented in our society. Let's not forget the big deal is that they're in the majority, folks. John and I, as men, we're in the minority. So if you're in the minority, you generally have to be relatively nice to the majority. But as it turns out, and John was mentioning to me the Academy Awards, at the Academy Awards, you know, they're criticized today because there's not hardly any awards for black people or for black movies. Well, it turns out that the 7,000-some people who are in the group that votes in the Academy Awards, Screen Actors Guild, directors, and so on, 94% of them, first of all, are white.
Yes.
And something like 67% are men. So what do you expect? Oh, and the average age is 63.
63 years old.
Oh, my gosh. So what do you think that group is going to think was good or favorable? Well, what do you think is going to attract their attention?
Yeah.
Now, they should break through and try to see the world without the kind of blinders of their age and their gender and so on. And that's always important, especially for men. And John is nodding his head a little bit. But it is. It's very important for us. We're pretty awful to women as a group most of the time because we got the power. Ha, ha, ha. And shame on us. So it's just something to always think about as a man. How can you better treat women, not only because they're in the majority, and but they deserve respect equally, okay? All right. So try to read Craig Foran's editorials every Sunday and Wednesday, for that matter, but... this Wednesday was particularly good, his learning experience watching that movie. Also, don't have a lot of time here now. John, do you have, and I do have an editorial opinion that can wait till next week. Do you have...
I got a quick thing.
Things you want to toss in?
Just want to shout out to the Dearborn Big Band. Is doing a concert at the Dearborn Performing Arts Center on Sunday at 2 p.m. Guest vocalist of Diane Hira. Only $5 a ticket. Should be a great show.
Okay. Just a little article is going to be in probably Sunday's pressing guide, written by Kirk Anthony Krug. He's a special writer to the Free Press, and he's also works in the public information office here at Henry Ford. He likes to do stories about celebrities, Hollywood stars, and in this case, he probably happened to be watching one of my favorite shows on broadcast TV, Person of Interest, which on CBS on Tuesday nights, 10 to 11 p.m. And I was quite surprised, too. The episode is entitled Control, Alt, Delete. That's like three keys on a computer keyboard that might do a function of some sort. Anyway, it took place, the story actually took place in Dearborn and Detroit. And they showed a picture of the University of Michigan Dearborn Ford Motor Company, a fictional newspaper called the Dearborn Observer, which doesn't exist, was mentioned in the episode. Of course, fiction doesn't exist. The Detroit Red Wings were mentioned, whom a detective who is an ongoing character in the story, he ripped on toward the end. So that's not nice. Detroit Red, I don't know, are they doing well? I don't follow.
They're doing well.
Okay, yeah. Well, shame on him for ripping on. But whoever wrote it must have had some background here. Unfortunately, it wasn't filmed here. It was filmed in New York City. And in fact, the picture they showed of University of Michigan Dearborn was a very old building. I think it's one of the University of Michigan buildings in Ann Arbor, actually, that they used. So they got it. They got a few things wrong. The story itself is almost become science fiction, or science fact, if you will. It's about government computer that is all-seeing and all-knowing, listens to everything like the NSA does now, internet and phone calls, but actually thinks. It is omniscient. Well, not omniscient, but it's pretty smart, and it has its own level of artificial intelligence. So it's making decisions about controlling the world more and more, not just the United States, and threatening political leaders and so on, and causing havoc around the country through various computer-connected ways. And so everybody's running scared, and there's a small group here that are starred in the show that are trying to fight this big sentient computer called Samaritan. And again, it's not too far away from the computers that our government already has that collect and analyze almost everything we're saying and doing. I haven't heard that they collect and analyze radio and TV broadcasts, but it's only the internet and all the phone calls and text messages, so that's all.
That's all.
It's only that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't worry.
So far.
Yeah. and Samaritan also, this the sentient computer system, is also connected with, at the same time, is collecting and analyzing all the visual images from all the monitoring closed-circuit cameras all over the country. So every building, every street corner that has a traffic cam, if you will, that's part of its system. So it can always track down someone, either by facial recognition or by their phone calls or their internet use at any day, any time, anywhere. So it's really scary, but it's not too far away, folks, from what actually will happen.
Big Brother.
Even Stephen